Hi, friends. Today's show is brought to you by Datadog, a full-stack monitoring platform for dynamic infrastructure and applications. With 250-plus integrations, customizable dashboards, and algorithmic alerts, Datadog empowers your team to visualize and optimize every layer of your stack. Start a free 14-day trial, and Datadog will send you one of their t-shirts. Visit bit.ly.com/datadogshirt to get started. That's bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Marcus Carey. He is renowned in the cybersecurity industry. He owns ThreatCare.com and just put out a book with Jennifer Jin called The Tribe of Hackers. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out. Now, I understand that you started your career in the U.S. Navy, but were you hacking before that?
I wasn't hacking computers. I was very curious and taking apart things and building stuff with my hands. So the U.S. Navy gave me access to start doing it with computers, though.
Mm-hmm. And how long ago was that? Because I understand you also have a master's degree in network security.
Yeah, so it would have been probably 24 years ago. I'm 43. I joined the military when I was 18. Mm-hmm. And the military, I did good on my entrance exam, so I got into a technical field called called cryptography, and ever since then, I've been super technical.
And so you just take a test, and then they say, "All right, you'll be on the top of the boat, you'll be on the bottom of the ship, you'll be this crypto person." Like, did they direct you into cryptography, or did you have an interest in that already?
So when I went to the Navy, I just wanted to work with computers, and you take a test, You take an entrance exam, and they use that entrance exam to see what career fields that you're most likely going to be successful in. And so that ended up being cryptography for me.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, and now you're raising, what, $5 million in venture capital?
Yeah, so we've for ThreatCare, we've raised over $4 million in funding.
That's fantastic. It's so interesting to hear about how people come up, because, like, for me, I tell the story about how my fifth grade teacher loaned me an Apple II because I was getting into trouble, and she tried to keep me inside other than causing trouble on the streets. And so she loaned me this Apple II. If that had not happened, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't be talking to you. Like, I would have it'd be like that, you know, those movies where, like, someone's life splits in half and they're doing something entirely different. If you hadn't taken that test, or if that test had told the Navy that you'd be good at something else, you would have been a whole different person.
Yeah, certainly. But you know how I kind of look at the world and life is nothing happens on accident. So everything that meant to be is meant to be. So I was meant to, you know, be in the military, you know, all the good stuff and bad stuff, even, I think that was meant to be. So it's just the way my script was written.
That's fantastic. So now you work at ThreatCare. You own it. You're founder and CEO of ThreatCare, and you are simulating intrusions on networks.
Yeah. So definitely imitating intrusions. Essentially, we imitate black hat hackers on networks in order for our customers to find out where they need to improve their cybersecurity. And the cool thing about it is that we've automated that process, so anybody can use our software and look like that they're some kind of awesome hacker.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm not a hacker. Like, I break stuff occasionally, but I've never really felt like I was hacking. So the thing I find interesting is how people they enter InfoSec, and then they're always looking at everything with a secure perspective. You know, they're always thinking about how to break something. Does the software allow me to think like is it thinking for me like a hacker?
Well, the software lays out different steps in the methodology that a hacker would take. And it's funny because you can actually, you know, have you ever did a multiple choice test where you have to select on a computer where you have to drag and drop the answers? So we allow people to drag and drop attacks, push play essentially, and you can do an attack. So we let you kind of like pick from a, you know, from an ingredients, and then you can build your attack step by step. And that attack could be like the first thing that happens is, you know, they're stealing this, and then they move to this computer, and then they steal credit cards, and then they send them across the network, and all those different things. So you can script it out in a scenario.
Interesting. It's like an orchestrator.
Yeah, yep, definitely. You can orchestrate the cyber attacks, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So you also went to and put a book together that now I've just seen is on Amazon now called Tribe of Hackers. And it's basically cybersecurity advice from the best hackers in the world. And as of us talking right now, it's number one release in computer hacking. You put this together with Jennifer Jin.
Yeah. So we released that book 3 weeks ago. It's pretty much been number one book. It's been viral. We've sold thousands of copies of the book. All the proceeds go to charity, too, by the way.
Oh, that's great.
And so Jennifer Jin is actually my head of communications at ThreatCare. Hmm. So she actually helped me put that together and manage the project for us.
Okay. And you actually went and talked to a bunch of hackers and cybersecurity experts, some of which are people that we know, their names that are famous, and some that are maybe up and coming that we might not have heard of.
Yeah, absolutely. It was important to get a good blend. I see in life sometimes you could actually talk to people that are like have some all these accolades, and sometimes you can't relate to them as much. So sometimes in life you need a mentor that's just a little bit further down the street than you are, or you know, the road, should I say. Basically, they've accomplished just a little bit more than you have, and sometimes that advice is the best advice you can get. While you're shooting for the stars. Mm-hmm. So we took a pretty balanced approach where some of the people are famous. I'm using air quotes here because, you know, we're all nerds. So, you know, I don't know if there's such thing as a famous nerd. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we put the book together. And funny enough, some of the people that weren't real well known have hit me up. And now they're getting invited to speak at conferences and stuff. So it's been great for their careers as well.
Yeah, that's great. I feel that way sometimes about this podcast. There's folks that I've talked to while they were on the come up that are now, you know, amazing, huge people. And it's like, I feel like, oh, that was great. I was a step on the stairs as a part of their come up. And then I hear like, oh, so-and-so is doing this or doing that. It's like, oh, I had them on the show 5 years ago. That's great to lift people up like that.
Oh, 100%. And that's why I encourage people, if you have an opportunity from a business perspective to pitch and do pitch competitions, the more and more your name and your brand is out there, it all comes back around. And they say that there's no such thing as an overnight success, right? So somebody might just see you and think, oh, you just came up, you know, but you know, you've been at this for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, right? But mm-hmm. So there's no such thing as an overnight success. It is great to be part of other people's, you know, journey along the way. And it just makes you feel good inside. I think God actually created us to be a blessing to other people so we can feel that feeling that gives you. You can't get that with any other thing.
Hmm. I appreciate that. So you modeled the book Tribe of Hackers on this idea that Timothy Ferris had, this tribe of mentors where you would come up with a solid group of questions and you would ask a huge number of people those questions. So you put down 14 questions around cybersecurity, almost like a FAQ, but then you found like 70 different people who were all like notable hackers and asked them those 14 questions. And that resulted in a really great, of course, edited and curated book.
Yeah, certainly. I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss. Funny enough, he moved to Austin. I've been following him ever since the 4-hour work week. And that's what I'm saying. Like these kind of podcasts, your podcast, it can be used to inspire people. You know, there might be somebody, you know, come 5 years later and says, oh, man, I heard that podcast, you know, that you were on. And so, so I love the fact that people like Tim Ferriss. I'm also kind of a big fan of Gary Vaynerchuk. Those guys have been putting in work for so many years. Mm. And then you see that they finally have some kind of come up and they inspire other people to do similar things.
Yeah, this show will probably be somewhere in the 670s, 600 and show 680. I had Timothy Ferris on this show in June of 2007, 12 years ago. He was show number 70.
Wow.
So check that out.
Wow. That's dope. And yeah, like, look, yeah. So that's what I'm talking about. I mean, that shows that like you've been putting in that work too. So, that's why you have such a big following.
Well, I don't have that Gary Vaynerchuk money, but I'm going to keep grinding though, because we have fun here on the show.
Love it.
So you said also that entrepreneurship is a big part of your life and that you've like worked on and sponsored pitch contests. Why do you think pitching is so important for people who are doing startups?
I think I tell people that life's a pitch. You're always pitching to people. You're always pitching to people that could be your future employees, like people that they know you, they know your brand, they know that you're about your business. You're also pitching to investors. Cause like, even though that first time you might not get an investment, what they're looking at you long-term over time. And as you pitch and you pitch and you're out there, they hear your story, they hear your progression, they're going to invest someday. And then you're also pitching to a customer. So people are listening. Those customers are also listening to your story. And so, pitching allows you to be able to sell essentially yourself to all those three different people. And so it's good to keep that, to keep tight and always be able to tell your story.
One of the things that we've actually both worked on, this idea of Pitch Black, which was a pitch contest for people of color. There was one in Portland. There was one in Austin, where you are located. You think it's important for underrepresented folks to make sure that they're getting their faces out in front of people that look like them, but also people who don't?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's a great opportunity to get out there and be inspirational. So the first Pitch Black that they had in Austin, I was a judge and I got to give feedback. And I've actually mentored and had coffee with some of those founders and, mm-hmm. and still, you know, associate with those founders. Even though I'm not a billionaire yet, I'm able to pass on the stuff that I do know. And so, I also sponsor hackathons as well. Mm-hmm. Just like anything that I can do to, and the hackathon that I sponsor is at Houston Tillotson, mm-hmm. which is a historically black college in Austin, Texas. So mm-hmm. I talked there. I've sponsored their hackathon. I've judged their hackathon. I've helped mentor kids there through different programs. So the only way that people that look like me are going to come up is if people start investing more in that. And I mean people that look more like them, either investing time. If you don't have money to invest, but I'm just blessed that I can actually volunteer time and money when I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that people don't realize that the investing of time is so important. Like simply showing up to a hackathon, showing up to a college or a university. You know, not everybody has the money that they can donate, but simply being present is an important thing. Showing solidarity.
Yeah, 100%. I tell this to everyone, especially investors. I wish investors showed up more to those events because even if they're not making an investment, they definitely can give some game, show their presence, and also show that the investors are just normal people, just like us, everybody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just want to show people that you're human. From an investor perspective, from an entrepreneur perspective, from a developer perspective, there's no magic going on here. And sometimes the kids, you know, that come from where I'm from, they think it's all magic.
Yeah, I feel like we don't sometimes teach the kids how to interact socially, like the importance, like you go to a conference, that's one thing, but then you spend time in the hallway conference, you know, the conference outside the conference. If you're not able to have those interactions, you can have you'll have less of a good time, and you'll be less likely to network with people.
Yeah, 100%. What I try to tell kids to do most of all, though, definitely important to interact, but I like for them to be comfortable in their own skin, and be themselves and be authentic. because a lot of times I see people trying to be somebody else. They might see a Tim Ferriss or a Gary Vaynerchuk or whatever, and what they do is they'll try to imitate that person's swag. Mm-hmm. Or if they see a famous black person or whatever that may be, like, you know, you were made to be special. Everybody's special in their own way. And just be yourself at all times. And that's the best way to interact. Because what happens is, if you're not being authentic in those hallways like you're talking about, people are going to think you're fake. Mm. They can tell. You can tell when somebody's acting or putting on a front. And you can tell when somebody's being genuine. And the people that are genuine always have the most uptake as far as like getting what they want accomplished.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's just because of the rise of social media and particularly things like Instagram, which I'm now convinced that Instagram is just to make me feel bad about myself and my career. Everybody in Instagram is getting on a private jet and I'm like, you know, sitting at Subway sandwiches while I'm scrolling through Instagram, looking at all these people on their jets. And I'm thinking to myself, there's so many people out there kicking butt that how can I possibly kick butt? You know, I try to keep my kids from looking at stuff like that, but it's just very interesting way to think about it. Like how can one be unique and be themselves when we have, when we now have the ability to see everybody, you know, out there doing stuff and not find it overwhelming. Like if I'm already established, I can look at these things and I can say, well, good for them. You know, I'm doing fine. They're doing them. Cool. But if I'm on the come up, seeing your success might stress me out.
Yes, certainly. The thing that I tell people is, it's a saying. It's attributed to Benjamin Franklin, where they say, "Believe half of what you see, and none of what you hear." Mm. So when I see people on stuff, I just believe half of it. And even when in a venture game, when you hear somebody raising a lot of money, that doesn't mean that they're actually operating a successful business or a profitable business. Like in this game, in venture capital, usually when you raise money, you have 12 to 18 months to prove it. Mm. And it's all an experiment. So what you'll see is you see somebody raise $10, $20, $30 million, and then 12 to 18 months later, they're flopping. It's floppery. So I would encourage people to don't believe the hype, old Public Enemy song. So you're going to see people, do that, and don't pay attention at all, because half of it's fake. And then like on the hearsay, the second half of that saying is believe none of what you hear. You're going to hear rumors and all that stuff all the time about how somebody's doing this or doing that. I don't believe it.
I think that's an important thing to remember, that flex, like if you're flexing, if you have that much time to flex on social media, are you actually doing the work? Because most of the people I know that are really successful and doing well are doing well because they're doing the work and you don't see them. They're not as visible, and you won't see them on social media. You'll see them at hackathons or you'll see them at local events.
Yeah, certainly. And I like what you said there. Local events and hackathons are great ways to network with people. If people follow me on Twitter, I'm always encouraging and trying to help people out. And that's another form of networking. So how are you contributing to making other people's life better? And so in business, you're either going to save people time or money. So those are the things that you have to do. And I tell you, like, if you're helping people like that, then you're going to be more successful. It's more about cultivating those relationships and building good relationships. So those are the people that are going to win. The people that are promoting themselves, they're all about me. And most of the time, those people, they're not going to win.
Mm-hmm. You're a very good developer. Probably. Regardless, you write bugs, and that's unavoidable. What is avoidable is wasting time trying to track down the cause of those bugs. Sentry.io provides full-stack error tracking that lets you monitor and fix problems in real time. See the severity and scope of the error, get immediate access to the stack trace, connect the problem to the commit that caused it, and fix it without delay. Sentry, a name that's so common we have to include our top-level domain in our advertising to make sure you remember them. Sentry.io. That's Sentry, S-E-N-T-R-Y.io. Open source, full stack. Web apps, native apps, mobile games, smart oven mitts, if you can program it, Sentry can make it far easier to fix any errors you encounter with it. Let's fix broken code together. Visit Sentry.io. Someone told me something that was interesting that I'm about avoiding being a transactional networker. They were getting into the software community, going to events and stuff, and they were interacting with people who seemed to keep score on things that they were routing. Like you would route someone to another person. You say, yeah, you should talk to so-and-so, which is great that you should do that. You should say, hey, Marcus, you should meet so-and-so. And they'll, and then boom. But if I'm keeping score and then I call you later and I say, hey, you know, I've referred you to six different people, or hey, you know, I've been basically keeping score about all the different things, and then suddenly calling in a favor. That's what they call transactional networking, and it's definitely unhealthy. I wonder if you've ever bumped into that, because it sounds like you give freely of your time.
Yeah, and you totally. I love what you're talking about here. And the thing that I've also noticed, the thing that bugs me about some of those things is, I like, why aren't you helping the person, really? Because this is what I see. Definitely in the, you know, because I'm black, right? So I see that in different places, there's one or two black people that they refer all the black people to. And so in Austin, there's one or two people that you need to meet such and such. Or like, since I'm in cybersecurity, there's one black guy that everybody tells me, have you talked to such and such? Do you know this person? And I'm like, they're routing all the black people to that one person. And so that person, is cool, but why aren't you helping? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it blows my mind. And then at the end of the day, that the black person that they're routing people to, even if they're a VC or an angel or a successful entrepreneur, they don't have the bandwidth to answer every black person's question that they're getting routed to for. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a myth amongst any group that there can be only one. So for my friends, like, I'm a type 1 diabetic and I have a pump and I'm very visible about that. Like, this is something that I, you know, you can't hide being black, but I could certainly hide being diabetic. I don't need to tell people about it. But I think that young diabetic kids need to see people that are successful and healthy and living. So then I'm visible about that. So then I become the one that everyone sends their diabetic friends to. Like 5-6 times a week. Hey, can you have coffee with so-and-so? Hey, can you have lunch with this person? They just became diabetic. Their kid just became diabetic. But there's lots of other people who can step up and help out. And I don't want to be salty about that. You know, so it's this balance where you want to represent, but at the same time, there's a huge community. Why is it just gotta be me?
Yeah, you kind of made me think about that a little bit. But yeah, so I definitely think that anybody can help. So I would say, like, see what you can do for that person before passing them on. Because a lot of times everybody has a unique skill set. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what can you do to help that person out?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm talking about.
I think people see, like, we were talking about Tim Ferriss and Gary and things like that. They see folks like that and they think, well, they're so successful. They have these blogs. They have a whole media behind it. How can I help? Like, I'm just trying to get people to blog and podcast. And they'll say things like, well, what can I offer? And well, you can offer your story, right? You can offer how you got there. That's interesting and that's unique to you. We shouldn't second guess ourselves and say, I have nothing to offer. Because, you know, I'm not as far ahead as Marcus in InfoSec.
Oh, you, man, you're preaching, man. You're laying down a sermon, man. like, everybody's an expert at something. You're expert yourself, probably. You're probably an expert at your background, the food, the culture, wherever you come from. You probably know more about that than 99% of the people. And somebody out there is going to find that super interesting. And I think the number one thing that I do when I mentor people is I make them believe that they're badasses. Just like, look, man, you know, look, sister, look, brother, this is what you have that nobody else has. And everybody has a superpower. And I encourage them to use whatever that superpower is for good. It's just like if you watch Marvel, people have all these different powers. I encourage them to find their superpower and use that for good.
Yeah. It's funny. I love that you're saying these things because I say the same thing. Like, we just met now doing this podcast, but I have like productivity talks and talks that I've given where I literally have on the slide, everyone is an expert at something. Like, find your superpower. I tell my kids, I've got an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old. They haven't figured out what their superpowers are yet. But we'll figure it out. Like, it could be storytelling. It could be speaking. It could be being in a play. It could be lifting others up. We don't know. But once they find it, they're going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, 100%. So that's why I'm actually a fan of The Incredibles. Because if you watch that movie, the kids are actually figuring out how they fit in with their superpowers and how they complement each other as a family and a team and all that stuff. So that's all that it is. If you haven't found that superpower, you know, sometimes your superpower, other people see it, but you don't see it. Like, my wife is the best listener I've ever seen. And people randomly, even when we're out somewhere randomly, people will pour their heart out to her and she just listens. So that's a form of empathy, where she just listens, and the people are delighted that somebody listened to them. So that's a superpower, because not everybody has time to listen to somebody. It could be as simple as that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, but sometimes, like, I see that when I look at my wife, and I'm like, man, that's crazy. But my wife think that's just normal. Mm-hmm. So Superman, he believes it's natural for Superman to be super strong, super fast, or whatever. That's no big deal to him. But the onlookers can all see, like, God dang, that dude has all those powers. Mm-hmm. Right? So sometimes you have to ask people, what am I really good at? And then they can help you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My one of the things that I'm trying to learn about is, like, how to be really empathetic. I'm a fixer, right? I want to fix everything. My wife is a listener. So she will tell me, she says this thing in her culture called cry with the crying. Someone will call, they'll have a problem. Of course, I'm like, all right, let's break it down. Let's break down the problem. We'll fix it. That's not really healthy, because this is a person who called to cry. So let's let the crying happen first. Like, listening in that case is her superpower, and letting that person get that process out. They didn't call to fix it. They called to have an outlet, to have a place to talk about it. They'll fix it in a minute, but let them have their moment. And I've learned that from her.
Yeah, man, I could not agree more. Empathy is all about listening and not trying to fix it. So there's this really good book. There's two books that I kind of recommend, but you probably heard about So You Want to Talk About Race. You seen that book?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I need to have her on the show, actually.
Man, that book blew my mind because it actually called out privilege. And there's a lot of things that I actually didn't know that I was privileged, but that was the first person that's like, look, to make me think about how privileged I am. Like, you know, crazy stuff. Like, I was in the military. I worked for NSA. I had access to all these computers, all this different things, the training, my master's degree, born in the U.S. So, yeah. So, but that book also talks about empathy and how important it is to just sometimes just listen and don't try to fix it. Because if you're trying to fix it, you can't listen well. You can't do two things at the same time.
Yeah. I'm going to make sure that there's links in the show notes to that book. So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijoma Oluyo, as well as your book, of course. And what was your other recommendation?
So the next one is Dare to Lead.
Dare to Lead?
Yeah. By Brené Brown.
Yeah. Brené Brown.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing, because she also talks about empathy. You know, something that I figured out and by reading those books is like men and women write books differently. Because and this is going to be this is somewhat of a general statement. This is what I've learned and seen with myself. Mm-hmm. Women write well. Women write super well about all kind of business stuff, but the tone of how they talk about stuff is totally different. For instance, like crazy enough, Scott Adams has a couple of books. Scott Adams, he actually is the writer of Dilbert, but his tone and how he talks about stuff is like male and very masculine, probably even chauvinistic tones. And then when I listen to a book written by some of the women, it's like a super empathetic, feminine tones. And even the subject matter talking about empathy. Because if you talk about yin and yang energy, like I believe that men they bring that dark energy a lot, and so and women bring the opposite in many cases. And I know I'm speaking a little bit general here, but what I found out is like it's good to take in books from women and men to have some kind of balance. Because mm-hmm. a lot of business leaders are men, and if you listen to that, you're just gonna be like hardcore. Like that Uber type, you know, Uber, Facebook, you know, sales, you know, whatever. But if you take in both, that's what I'm trying to do with my company is build a culture that accommodates both the yin and the yang.
Well, and it's also interesting to just think about why we think of those things as being male and how we as men can reclaim empathy. And it can be a people thing. Like, why can't men be empathetic? Why does that need to be thought of as a feminine thing? Like, you look at like people like The Rock, who you know are both, you know, very masculine in his presentation, but also extremely thoughtful. Terry Crews. These are very, very empathetic men. Like, we can reclaim that as men.
Man, I could not agree with you more. And so in English, we would say, you know, feminine and masculine. In different languages, they have different ways to describe this. And it's not necessarily related to gender and all that stuff. So absolutely 100% agree. If you listen to some like some of the African culture, some of the Far East culture, Indian culture, they have way more ways to describe what I'm trying to talk about here than we do. But in America, for sure, the masculinity and not wanting to have any softness about a man, men can't cry, all that stuff is definitely a problem.
Well, man, gender's a spectrum, right? Like, once we figure that out, we'll be a lot better.
Oh, for sure. I mean, so like one of my best friends is from Hyderabad, ride or die brother. He's from India. In their culture, they do stuff like, you know, hold hands with their friends. Like two males can walk down the street, and it's mm-hmm. totally innocent, totally nothing. Hug, like in like what if Americans saw that. You know, he was like, you know, what's going on there, man? You know, if my friend tried to grab an American's man hand, it would be a problem.
There was a really great viral video that went, it was on Twitter a couple of days ago, where a gentleman was testing out to see whether men were, basically he was running around complimenting men. So he'd walk up to a man on the street and say, hey, nice butt, or you look nice today, or whatever. And he had no idea whether those gentlemen were gay or not. And some of the reactions, and this is now in 2019, were super positive because the people he were complimenting weren't gay, but they said, oh, man, that is very nice. Thank you. You made my day. Like, it's okay to take a compliment. It's okay to say, man, I appreciate you. Thank you, like, very much. And then there was one little gif that ended up being the man who walked away after the compliment, even though it was a gay man giving a compliment to a straight man. He had a little swagger in his step. So it was clear that it legitimately made this dude's day. And he like was like, hey, you know, somebody found me attractive. They weren't my preferred person, but hey, then he just had a little swagger, a little attitude for the rest of the day. And he must have felt pretty good about himself. Getting that compliment.
That is so awesome, dude. I love it.
Yeah, man. Well, I really appreciate you chatting with me today. People can check you out at threatcare.com. They can sign up for the PDF of Tribe of Hackers. And it's also now, of course, a bestseller on Amazon. So they should check that out. Thank you so much, Marcus Carey, for talking to me.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.